I never told no one that. My whole life I've been holding back. Every time I load my gun up so I can shoot for the stars, I hear a voice.
Well, I have to say, this is one of the fastest turnarounds out of 99 episodes. Literally, this episode was taped yesterday. Why? Because my 100th, I had to have a special guest. Comic Book World 100 issues is a huge thing. 100 issues of my podcast, 100 episodes. So yeah, I have to wait and see who my following week. But this week's guest is Jonathan Troyan. And we're going to be discussing the self-love revolution. It's a free webinar. And I guess yours truly, Omar Medrano, a man that it took him many, many, many years to learn how to love himself, I had the honor and privilege of becoming a guest. And I got to say, just to be on the same stage or the same panel as Sharon Lecter, John Gray, the list goes on and on. And Omar Medrano, completely. Webinars and seminars are a great way to move your life forward, to move you toward a goal. And in case you haven't heard the past few episodes, I have a job. I'm a consultant currently with Patrick Bet-David. Yes, the Patrick Bet-David of Valuetainment. He's having his Super Bowl, his annual conference, August 31st through September 3rd at the Diplomat Hotel in Hollywood, Florida. Book it. You need to be in rooms like this. Proximity is power, and you need to have power because you know what? While your competitor's hanging out on Labor Day weekend, you are learning. You are in a room filled with 3,000 attendees, top entrepreneurs, CEOs, and founders from every type of different industry all over the world. You are only maybe one person away, one meeting away, one idea away from blowing it out. DM me, text me, fax me, whatever. There's still plenty of great seats available. Selling out fast. Give me a call. Find me. The Vol, August 31st through November 3rd. And without further ado, let's listen in onto the episode. Aren't you getting kind of old? I knew I needed help. I had no self-confidence. Didn't believe in myself. I tried not to feel or listen to my intuition. All right. Another day, another dollar. Another one of my favorite episodes. Yes, I'm biased. It's my own podcast. What if it did work? Today's guest, Jonathan Troyan. He's a life mastery coach and creator of the self-love revolution. His mission to help people create joy in all areas of life, personal, business, and more importantly, the bank account. Jonathan spent 20 years in the entertainment industry, interviewing the biggest stars in the world with amazing success on paper. But the success then translated into happiness. He discovered he wasn't alone in this dilemma and made it his mission to discover what was wrong and how to fix it. After 15 years of research and practice, he created the Self-Love Revolution specifically to share this new methodology for creating success in all aspects of life. How's it going, Jonathan?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you so much for having me here, Omar.
Man, thank you. I'm super excited because you're getting ready to kick off what I think is it's an amazing webinar. Tell the listeners a little bit about it.
It's huge. It's the Self-Love Revolution Summit. And we've done them in the past. But this one, we have some amazing people. Of course, you're in it. We have John Gray. You know, he was the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, along with, I don't know, I lost count, 15, 20 other books. One of the most prolific authors on relationships and enhancing your relationships with yourself, with others. We have Brooke Burke, actress, star, host of many shows. We just have some amazing people. Bill Walsh is there. He's one of the top business coaches. But he understands, you know, it's got to come from within. We have 25 plus of some of the world's greatest thinkers, leaders, authors. sharing, you know, their journeys with this. It hasn't all been easy. We've all come through our own journeys and discovered, you know, hey, all the money in the world isn't going to make you happy. It helps. Money's great. But it's not the final definition of happiness. We know that. And they share their strategies on how to create real meaning in your life and joy in your life.
Well, for me, it was a process. It took me almost 47 years to come to that conclusion. Before, it was always had this if-then. And yes, it pushed me when it came to professional or just goals in general, whether it's to get a degree at LSU. I was rejected by Syracuse. If I write a book, then I'll be happy. These were the equations. If I buy a brand new car, then I'll be happy. And then it was always like, it's this methodology that a lot of people, that eventually you'll get, one, you'll grow tired, and two, you're never going to be happy because there's always going to be something else that's way out in the distance. Well, once I get that, and then once you get that, it's only a temporary thing. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, this is how we've been trained. Here's the equation as I share it. We were taught this in grade school. If we work hard for long enough, we'll be successful. If we're successful for long enough, then we'll be happy. And that is the definition of the midlife crisis. Because we work hard, we become successful, we climb that ladder, and there we are. Well, hey, how come I'm not happy? You know, and of course, the famous people, you know, who didn't work for, we know about, you know, Anthony Bourdain and people like that. They end up taking their own lives, not because of lack of money or lack of success in their field, because something else wasn't fitting in. That missing ingredient is what I call self-love, and how we incorporate that into our lives. But yeah, we are a society that postpones happiness into the future. Even, you know, when I really started learning about this, it's defined, at least in America here, it's defined in our founding documents that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The pursuit of happiness is killing us because it's all we ever do is pursue it in the future. Like you say, when I have that, then I'll be happy. Of course, eventually, many of these we get. I'm not going to say I've achieved every goal, but I've set lots of goals and I've achieved them knowing it would make me happy. And yeah, I'm excited about it when, oh yeah, I achieved it. Yeah, pat on the back. Great job, Jonathan. But then 3 days later, I'm like, well, you know, I'm still not as rich as the guy three doors down from me. And my car's not as nice as that guy down the street. And I'm still only living on 3rd Street. I'm 2 blocks from the beach. That guy's living on the beach. What's wrong with me? Like all these comparisons that we have to other people. So we make another goal and then we'll be happy then. And it's just this nonstop cycle until one day we say, I'm going to stop. I'm going to live by a new equation. And the new equation is, let's be happy now, because isn't that why you're working so damn hard in the first place? Let's be happy now. The tools I use are the tools of self-love, self-compassion. Be happy now. Then you are successful, because that's what you're trying to do. And when you're successful, man, it's so hard to just show up and work and contribute and to be of service and to give. It's just an easier equation to live by.
Just, it's a choice. And I tell that to people every day. I choose, or we all get that choice when we get out of bed. Am I going to have an outstanding day? Am I going to create my own happiness because it's in abundance? Or am I going to get up, tired, cranky, hating because it's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's whatever day of the week, talk about everything that I don't have and just go about being miserable? And to me, that's why I wake up. I was excited. I was happy to speak to you, not because we're discussing happiness and self-love, just because I chose, it was a choice and I chose to be happy and excited.
Well, you know, that's what we have to do. You know, one of the biggest changes in my life is, you know, I had one of the first online internet streaming companies. We broadcast bands, some of the biggest bands in the world back in the 90s. From, you know, Ricky Martin and NSYNC onto, you know, Green Day, the Ramones, all kinds of bands. And I was working with the biggest stars. I went on to produce TV. And I remember what I used to do then is at the end of the day, I review my day. And even on a great day, I kind of remember this one vividly. I don't know why this one always stands out, but I was interviewing Cher, for those that you know, go back and remember Cher, huge star. And I remember there was this cricket in the room and it was hidden behind a radiator and it kept chirping, chirping, chirping in the middle of the interview. And of course, whatever's in the room, the mic picks up. So, you know, when you get back home and you review your day, I don't think about how gracious Cher was to our questions. Like, you know, we're going to ask Cher something she's never been asked before. She's been interviewed by thousands of people. And this was sort of towards the beginning of when I was doing interviews. I wasn't even a great interviewer back then. You know, what I focus on, that the messed up interview because of the cricket. Like, and I would do that. You know, I get home from these networking events and, you know, I meet all these people and then these stories would come about how maybe I said the wrong thing or they're not gonna like me or I'm not good enough for them. And I'd be filled with all these negative stories, even on a hugely successful day. Today, my evening routine is totally different. I still review the day and I acknowledge I could do things different. I'm sure in our interview, I'm going to slur some words. I'm going to say something backwards, but I won't harp on that. I used to harp on that. I'll let that go. I'll acknowledge it. Maybe I can do better next time. Can I learn? And then I'll go over just all the great things. Hey, had a great conversation with Omar. Hey, you know, building up for the self-love summit that's coming up next week. You know, and just focus on all the beautiful things that happened today. Spent time with my son. The green flowers outside. I looked in the backyard. There's a hibiscus plant that's just blooming so big. And I will focus on all of that. And then I go to bed happy. And then I wake up happy instead of what it was before, where it didn't matter how great a day was, I could pick up the crap, pick out every crappy thing. Because let's be honest, every day is a combination of good things and bad things, right? Things you wanted to happen and things that didn't go exactly how you planned. Sometimes more of one than the other. And, you know, it's a little seesaw. At the end of the day, you just get to choose what you focus on. It doesn't negate that you did something wrong or someone else wronged you or something you didn't want to happen. It did. But where do you spend the majority of your time? There's good stuff that happened to you also. There are miracles abounding every day. All you got to do is open your eyes and look at it. So this is a process of looking at those.
It's a process, but it's also hard on twofold, because one, you have Madison Avenue, that the advertisers are great, because I mean, we both have degrees in that, to communicate that message that I will feel so much better with that car, or I'll have more status, or I'll have more friends if I buy this. And if I buy that, you have that one aspect. And then the other aspect, which we didn't have growing up, was social media, where we could stage our lives. We could filter our pics. We can create whatever story we want to create. And people look at that and they get all bent out of shape because they don't realize it's an illusion. One, you should never compare yourself. But then they start comparing their life with the person that's posting about being with their soulmate, even though 2 weeks from now, their status is complicated.
You know, here's my take on that. What I found is when we get into this world of making these choices to choose joy, to choose happiness, to choose bliss, we begin to blame those that aren't doing it. Hey, you know, just wake up and you can think this and change your thoughts. But the reality is, like you said, you know, Madison Avenue and all these advertisements we get, they're powerful. If you're struggling, here's what I want to say. It's not your fault. It's not your fault that you made a wrong choice. You're doing exactly what your parents taught you, what your teachers taught you, right? I mean, I remember taking, you know, a thing and then some test in seventh grade to define what I was going to do for the rest of my life, right? This is who you are. Like, what's up with that, right? And then all the advertising. You'll be happy when you have this car. You'll be happy when you have this house. You'll be happy when you have your six figures. Of course, now you'll be happy when you have your seven figures, right? So you get your, I remember when I first time I made six figures, you know, the 1990s, and I knew that was going to make me happy because everyone told me it would. That was the threshold. And there I did it, you know, and there I was making my six figures. It didn't affect the stories in my head. The stories in my head were still, you know, although I'm living in Hollywood, there are all these other people who are more successful than I am. So I want to start with, it's not your fault. You're doing exactly as you were taught to do. And you were taught wrong. We can't blame them. You know, I was taught Pluto was a planet. It's not. You know, I was taught that, you know, Jupiter had X number of moons. It didn't. It's got a lot more. You know, I was taught all these things that turned out not to be true. They taught me with love. I don't blame them for it. And we can start teaching differently. We can start practicing differently, going, oh, well, if I've been trying to get this success for 20, 30, 40 years, and I'm still not there, maybe I'm just doing it wrong. Maybe they taught me wrong. Maybe I got to try something different. So let's try something different. See if it works for you. Worked for me, worked with thousands of others. And if it does, hey, let's start teaching differently. Let's not sit our kids down in a classroom and say, hey, look around you. That's your competition there. Who's going to be number one? We've all seen that. Comparison is the thief of joy. Let's stop comparing ourselves to others. It's not helping you. It's not helping them. We just have to start practicing differently and teaching differently. Now that we have new information, we learned Pluto's not a planet. Okay. We've learned there's a missing ingredient to success. And that missing ingredient is self-love and self-compassion. And that's why I put this room full of people together with John Gray and Brooke Burke and Sharon Lecter and Bill Walsh and all these great people to really show us that there's a different way to live. And these are hugely successful people, but they learned and they teach us that we actually have to do it differently.
We all have to do things differently. The problem is that even with awareness, I love the people that are like, well, I'm a product of my own environment. It's like, well, you can break that cycle. I don't know why it's, you know, it's easier for people to go, well, this is the way I was brought up. Okay. And like what you said, Jonathan, okay, that was fine and dandy back then. But now that we have more tools and we have more awareness, let's try something different. Let's try, and you're right, the comparison thing. My youngest got, like, last year she was in the Salad Victorian of her middle school, and people are asking me if I was proud of her or if that changed anything. And it's like, no, because it didn't. To me, she was always going to be my daughter, whether she came in first, second, or she was last in her class. And it doesn't matter, really. And that's something we all, it's like this weird thing, because some society now is like, we don't need the score. We don't need to keep score. We don't need to keep track of the winners. But yet you're right. You're number six in class, or you're the salutatorian, you're the valedictorian. You guys have it made. You have it on easy street. And it's funny, because I remember growing up, this fake myth that if you went to, like, an Ivy League school, well, all those, once you graduate from there, there's no depression. There's no real world issues. You're impervious to the outside world. There's no suicides. And it's now, we're all human beings. It just means they went to a different school.
Look,
they pay more.
I have clients who are Harvard grads. I have clients who not professors there now, but that were professors at Harvard, you know, which is thought about as the top university in the world. None of us are immune. None of us are immune. And, you know, again, going back to, you know, it's hard to change and just making a choice. It's easy to change and make a choice if you know you can. But if you've been taught every day of your life, an old dog can't learn new tricks, it's hard to learn new tricks because you think it's impossible. An old dog can learn new tricks. Old humans can learn new tricks. I work with people of all ages. And, you know, we get these other phrases that get locked in, right? Another one, the early bird gets the worm, right? So if you're not up first thing doing it, you're going to lose. Well, that's not true. Look at the birds out there. They eat all day long. You know what? There are worms enough for all of them, and there are worms enough that there are beautiful miracles for you. They're being handed to you every single moment. If you want to sleep late at 10 o'clock, boom, at 10 a.m. when you get up, there's a miracle for you to grasp. You don't need to be the early bird. If you want to, great. Get that worm. If not, get the one that's in front of you when you get up. But we're taught all these things that have to do with success that are just wrong. We have to unpack that first. Okay, what I've taught has been wrong. Can I now think differently, do something differently? I have a habit. I had a habit for decades of looking in the mirror and, you know, just tearing myself apart. Jonathan, you look like crap. You know, there was a cricket in the room when you're doing an interview with one of the biggest stars in the world. And that stupid stuff. Like, that's not even real. Never mind the big mistakes that I did. That's the stupid stuff. And I did some really, you know, I made mistakes like everyone. I've had real failures like everyone. We just have to change. We have to understand that we can do it differently. That's the first step. You can make a choice to do it differently. Then practice doing it differently. These are skills. Self-love is a skill, right? I practice forgiveness. I teach forgiveness. Forgiveness is a skill. It's really hard at first. The first time I tried to say, I love you, I heard it on a Louise Hay recording. She goes, go to the mirror and say you love you. I'm like, oh, I've been doing this personal development work. It's going to be great. You know, I already started on the path, right? So I go to the mirror. I didn't have glasses back then. And I look at myself and go, Jonathan. That's an exact quote. I couldn't look myself in the eyes and I couldn't say the words. And I'm like, whoa. I curled up into a ball on the floor. Like, I had no idea what happened. Like, a truck hit me. I had to then figure out what to do differently. And then I started practicing. I couldn't say, I love you. So I said, okay, well, you know, I kind of liked my eyes. So I said, hey, Jonathan, I like your eyes. I like your smile. Okay, I started there. Hey, Jonathan, you know, good job on that interview today. Or, you know, I have a yoga studio here in Austin and, you know, good job that with that class you taught or with that interaction with a student or whatever it was. Or, hey, 10 new members today. Good job. And slowly, I just pick up one thing a day. And I practice saying kind things to myself. Now I look in any mirror in the world and it's an instant. I see myself in a bathroom mirror somewhere. Say, Jonathan, good to see you. Good job. I love you. It's like second nature now, but it was a practice. These are skills like playing piano, and a skill you can practice and become better, right? You go sit down to play the piano. If you never played, you're going to suck at it. But if you practice, you're going to get, you might not be a virtuoso, but you'll get good at it. Same with this. First time, you might suck at it. I did. But with practice, you begin to get really good at it. We just have to start practicing new skills.
You know, that's amazing that you said that, because for so many years doing the personal development and the business development, and I lied to myself like for years. Yeah, I love myself. I'm awesome. I'm amazing. But that would deep down inside, I couldn't forgive myself. I saw every flaw. I felt like every time I ever made a mistake, it was monumental, even though those that weren't. And it was always, it was always like, okay, yeah. It's always someone else's fault, or not being able to forgive other people. But it's like, how can I forgive them if I couldn't even forgive myself? And it wasn't until that aha moment where it was finally like two things. Yes, I forgive myself for everything. All the goofy stuff, all the dumb stuff. I'm human. I can't walk on water. I'm not perfect. I'm human. And then just to love myself, because I went from relationship to relationship to relationship thinking just like if then. Well, if I go out with this person, well, women, if I go out with this woman, I'll be happy. If I get married and have children, then I'll be happy. And it was always, I was always looking for happiness from other people, whether it was other people to give it to me, which, you know, it's not their job, or to buy happiness. And then it was like what you said, it was the most profound thing. I realized I don't need to write books. I don't need to do this. I don't need to go on any quests. Happiness is all around. And yeah, focus on the beauty. Focus on, and to quote Cher, we don't have to turn back time.
Yeah. You know, here's the great paradox. We try to change everything about things around us, our environment and other, and how other people act, as well as ourselves. We try and change everything with the belief that then we will be happy. The paradox is that when we accept ourselves and everything as it is and are happy with that, then the change happens. We're just doing it in the wrong order. Acceptance brings change. Acceptance brings happiness. Change does not bring happiness. And we know that because we've all changed things in our lives. Hey, did you change your relationship and know that this next one was going to be the one to make you happy? Yes, right? I get that, that there are a handful of people out there that are married and enjoying it to their, you know, high school or earlier sweetheart. But for most of us, we bounce through knowing the next one was the right one. Did you hate your job and quit it and then get a new one and still unhappy? Yeah, like this is what we did. Did you sell your old car and get your new car knowing that would make you happy? I used to do it. I used to move, right? You know, so I moved to LA so I could be near the beach, but I couldn't afford to be near the beach. So I was more in the middle of LA. Then as soon as I shared about my internet company, as soon as that got taken over, I'm like, okay, boom, I have some money now. Moved to Santa Monica near the beach. But I was on 11th Street. So I was 11 blocks from the beach, which at the time was great. But after a while, it's like a 20-minute walk to the beach. What's up with that? So I go, okay, you know, things change. I get a place on 3rd Street. Now I'm 3 blocks from the beach. I can see the sun set out my window and I could have my feet in the sand in a few minutes watching the sun set over the ocean. It was glorious. But you know what I did in those times walking back from the beach to my place on 3rd Street? I passed the houses on the ocean, on the beach. Then you go up the stairs. Then there are the houses on Ocean Avenue. And then on 2nd Street, just waiting for the day. I knew that when I could afford that house on the beach, I can still picture it now, right there. It had a pool and it was at the beach. I don't know why they do that. I knew that when I could afford that house, then I'd be happy. Until one day, you know, it's funny. So I was listening to this song. I listened to this 100 times. I was a big punk rocker back back in those days. And it was a band called Social Distortion. And I had seen the band live. We had broadcast them. I had interviewed the band. You know, and I had listened to this song hundreds of times. And I'm walking. There's a park overlooking the ocean. I'm walking down. I have my headphones in because that back then I didn't like the thoughts in my head. So I always had music because it drowned out the thoughts in my head, right? So I didn't even hear the beautiful ocean sounds. It was all music. And here are the words I heard from this song. It said, "You can run all your life, but not go anywhere." And even though I had heard that line hundreds or thousands of times before, it was like the first time I had ever heard it. And I'm like, whoa. Because a part of the story I didn't tell you, before I wound up in LA, I moved to Denmark and then moved to Spain, then moved to LA. Because I knew these changes would make me happy. When I heard that line and understood it, I realized that the only common thing in any of those places, Denmark, Spain, middle of LA, 11th Street, 3rd Street, was that I was there. Oh my God, what the heck is wrong with me? What's wrong with me that I can't be with me? I quit the entertainment business. I went on this journey to figure out what was wrong with me. And in this journey, I discovered two things. One, I wasn't alone. We're living in Hollywood, Dreamtown, right? The city of dreams, the happiest place. And there were a whole bunch of rich, miserable people. Now, it'd be granted, there were rich, happy people, poor, miserable people. Money was not the definer. But there were a lot of people with millions of dollars in those big houses that I was Googling over who were unhappy. I was not alone in this. It's a real problem. And then I discovered the second most important thing. There was nothing wrong with me. I didn't need to have to change and pretend I was someone else. I could be just who I was. And when I learned that I went on this journey to figure out what was wrong with me. When I figured out nothing was wrong with me, that's when freedom came. That's when the world opened up. And that's when things began to change. I have a yoga studio now. It's more successful than any other business I've had. Why? Because yoga is more successful than online music companies? No. But I've changed, and therefore everything around me has changed, and we have a great, flourishing, thriving community. And then the self-love revolution has grown out of that, and it's thriving. If you're not feeling great, if you're feeling like you're not enough, you're not alone. So many people are in your boat, but they just don't post it on Instagram. And you can start thinking differently and practicing these skills. Accept yourself, everything around you changes.
And to quote Mike Ness, I guess you broke that ball of chain, huh?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Well, that's what, you know, I talk about forgiveness that way, right? Forgiveness, when we repeat those stories, right? You repeat that story that happened 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and never mind last week, repeating it over and over. If that didn't happen or happened differently, my life today would be different. Maybe true. But forgiveness is giving up hope that the past can be different. I didn't make that up. Giving up hope that the past can be different. When we hold on to those stories, we are literally chained to the past. When we practice forgiveness, which is a huge element of self-love, when we practice forgiveness, we break that chain. So exactly, to quote another Mike Ness, we don't need to live with that ball of chain, which chains us to the past. We can now create a brand new future. Or if you want to go better than creating your new future, because we all go through that, we can create the life we want. Begin to surrender to the future that the life is offering you. Because man, life can offer you something that you can't imagine yourself. Open yourself up to surrender, and real dreams, real miracles will be fulfilled.
Now, to surrender is tough, but the first thing, though, they have to just let go of the past. A lot of times people just want to rewrite their history, though. It's not about, they romanticize it and make it seem like it was like the greatest time. If I talk to you about Lollapalooza and everybody, Lollapalooza 1991, it was like my first road trip. and I keep on talking about it over and over. The story is going to make it like I hung out with Trent Reznor, and I hung out with Perry Farrell and the whole nine yards, because we keep on rewriting it. We keep on either making it a much greater event that you try to hold on to, and it depresses you. You're sad because you can't go back there, or you make it the house of horrors. You keep on rewriting it and making something inconsequential to be like a life defining moment, or this woman that ghosted you or left. What could I have done differently? What could I have said differently? What could I have written differently? And it's like, stop it. Like what you said, just surrender. Let it all go. Let all the bad emotions go. Let all the hate, the anger, the frustration, resentment, let it all go and just breathe. Yeah, just the simple fact that we're breathing is something to be grateful for.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the older we get, you see all these people with these machines and whatnot. That person right there is not concerned about what happened 30 years ago at a concert or, you know, the Santa Monica Pier or whatnot. It's a simple fact that if only they could have breathe easily. And it's just that we always just bent and twist it over the silliest things. And it's funny because you would think I would have learned this. Like, I remember going to Fiji with my ex-wife for Anthony Robbins and the Mali. And the gist is, you go to the poorest, one of the poorest places in the world, and they're the happiest. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm tired of being, this is so right. But then, you know, your return flight lands in LAX, and you're like back to, you know, consumerism 101. So when's the next trip? That trip would have been so much better if we would have taken a first class trip.
You know, we live in a world of comparison. We live in a world where we remember the past and we imagine the future. But the truth is, we can't be happy in the past and we can't be happy in the future. We can remember good things from the past and be happy about them now, but you can only experience happiness right now. You cannot experience happiness in the past. You can't go back. You cannot experience happiness in the future. You can only experience it right now. And, you know, I want to be clear that happiness does not mean a lack of sadness or a lack of anger or lack of frustration. One is, I was taught at some point, you only can hold one emotion at a time. So if you're happy, you can't be sad. I don't know what kind of words you use, but I call bullshit on that. You can be happy and sad at the same time, right? You can be at a funeral of a loved one and be sad that they're not there and be happy for all the times you shared together at the same time. Mm-hmm. When you allow yourself, because we all have anger sometimes. We all have sadness sometimes. I wouldn't wish a life without sadness on anyone. There'd be no learning. We all have difficult times. When you can embrace them, when you can say, oh, there is sadness here, and I'm not going to go to the bar and try and get rid of it. I'm just going to be with it. You know what? There is anger inside of there, and there's a part of me that's hurt. Now, don't take it out on anyone, right? Because it's yours to deal with. But how can I have compassion for the anger that is inside of me right now? When you can have compassion for the anger that's inside of you right now, it softens it and creates room for the joy to rise up next to it and maybe become bigger than it. But all these emotions we're supposed to feel, if we weren't supposed to feel them, we wouldn't have been given them, right? You know, especially for those that do believe in some divine presence, whether it's God, universe, whatever you want to call it. If we weren't supposed to have all these emotions, this divine whatever wouldn't have given them to us. We're supposed to experience the gamut of it. Now, it's what do we do when it's here? Do we try and avoid them? Well, that's going to really suck because I promise you they're going to come back up to bite you. You try and suppress that anger, you're going to be angrier next time. You try and suppress that sadness, you're going to be sadder next time, or it's going to come up as some sort of disease. But if you can begin to accept all those emotions, oh, that was sad. It's okay to be sad. Oh, that hurt me. It's okay to feel hurt. Now those emotions can dissipate from your body. Otherwise, until you see them, they find a home in your body. Like, you don't want to talk to me now? Fine, I'm going to go bury myself in this muscle or this joint, and I'll just come back later. Right? We've all experienced that. Then we find someone who they're really mad, and it's like for nothing at all. And we're trying to figure out why they blew up. Well, it's because it wasn't because of what happened then. It's because of what happened before that they've just been suppressing. It all comes out at once. That's why people cry in movies. It's all that stuff that they've been suppressing. The movie's not real. But all that stuff now is beginning to come out because it's a safe place to let it out. So we just got to create safe places to let out all the emotions so that the joy, which is our birthright, we can just experience. And there might be sadness with it. There might be anger with it. There might be difficulties with it. Or it might just be hanging out on its own. Joyful life. I love it. And all of it is great.
Now, growing up in America, isn't it tough, though, when we were always raised, suck it up. Suck it up. Suck it up. Everything was always suck it up or bury it. Bury and go right past.
That's right.
All the bad stuff.
And did it work?
Heck no.
No,
because like what you said, it grows. Like what you said, all that resentment, all that anger. For the longest time, I would watch my mom and dad divorced before I was born. So I always had, you know, the abandonment issues or father issues. And it was always like, I would always tear up and I would always love movies like dealt with father-son type relationships, The Karate Kid, Rocky, Frequency. And it wasn't until I had that aha moment that, and until I deal with it, instead of just acting like it never bothered me, it would always be there.
Yeah.
And everybody had, right? But when you're taught to suck it up, what usually happens is like, you blow up over the stupidest thing. And usually it's someone else that you shouldn't have been blowing up on them.
Exactly.
There's a consequential thing. And they're looking at you like you're crazy.
What did I do? I did nothing. I'm sorry. I banged your shoulder. I'm so sorry. And you're freaking out because of everything that happened to you for the past 30 years that you haven't been able to get out of your system. And this guy didn't even do anything. Yeah. You know, here's the thing. So many of us, especially our generation, but it's not because I last summer when I was at the pool, I saw someone saying it. The kid must have been 4 or 5, maybe 6 years old. And he was crying in the pool and he gets out of the pool. And the father said, "Stop crying, boys don't cry." And I cringed when I heard that because so many of us have been told, don't cry, don't be sad. Don't be angry. Don't be afraid. Those are the big three. Other things too, but don't be sad. Don't be angry. Don't be afraid.
Don't show your emotions.
Yeah. What you're when you're told that, you're basically being told, don't be human. If you're being told, don't be sad. Don't be angry. Don't be afraid. Don't feel your emotions. You're being told, don't be human. Because look around you. Look around this entire planet. Can you point to a single person that's never been sad, never been angry, never been afraid? No, everyone. So basically we're teaching people, don't be human. And then we get disconnected from our body. People say they feel numb. They numb out. That's why we turn to TV or alcohol or drugs or whatever it is, because we need to numb out because we don't know how to not to feel our feelings and our emotions. So we have to numb out in order not to feel them because we've been told not to feel them. And it amazes me when I look at TV now. Of course, it happened then. I just didn't understand it, you know, and you have a scene and someone's having a bad time. And what's the first thing that happens? They offer the person a drink. Now, I'm not against drinking. I haven't given up drinking alcohol. I you know, I don't drink it a lot anymore because my body doesn't want it. And I don't try and flee emotions like I used to. I couldn't wait to go to the bar not to feel what I was feeling. Now I want to feel what I'm feeling. But so I'm not against drinking, but as a way to not feel bad, well, that's pretty bad. That's pretty harmful. Because we need to start being human again. We need to start feeling our feelings so that we don't blow up at the most minuscule things. And again, so that they don't get buried in our body and take space that joy is supposed to take. When that releases from your body, when you do experience, when you do the journey that you were talking about and making peace with you know, with your parents that you know, got divorced before you were born. And once you make peace, and my parents got divorced too, you know, once you begin to make peace with those things or those past relationships or the crap that you did, right? When you make peace with that, that is released from your body. That emotion is then released from your body. A vacuum is formed when it's released. It's got to be filled by something. Now, it can be filled with more crap, to be clear, or you can use the tools to fill it with joy. And then you fill all these vacuums with joy. And then all of a sudden, well, there's more joy than all the other crap. And now they know that some of your crap, when I learned this, it was woo-woo. But now they've proven it in a lab by testing on rats. I don't appreciate animal testing, but hey, they did it. And this is what's been proven. The trauma that your ancestors went through are actually in your DNA. It's in your body too now. So you got to release your own crap, but you also got to release that from your ancestors from way back when. Now, what they haven't proven yet, but I suspect they will, because the same person that taught me that you're holding on to your ancestors' trauma taught me this part, that you, when you heal that, you can heal the trauma in yourself that then unties those knots. Knots is what are the words they use. Today, we would call that DNA. They didn't know what DNA was back then. It changes the DNA back, and then that changes it in your offspring, even if they're already born. So I can't prove that yet, but 5 years ago, we couldn't prove that DNA was changed by trauma and that changed DNA was passed on to your offspring. Now we can. I suspect they're going to soon have the technology to prove this next part of the equation. So heal it in yourself. And if you have kids, And you don't feel you're good enough to do this, fine, don't do it for you. Do it for your children so that they'll live a better life.
Oh, I've been a big proponent of a personal development just because my two daughters.
Yeah.
I didn't want I wanted the dysfunction to end with me. With the, you know, the self-hate or the self-pity and the running away and all the other things I realized it had to stop with me. And that's a perfect example. But that's one reason why self-love is hard to practice, because so many people just, that woo-woo crap. It doesn't work. I mean, I went to a BNI meeting. And one, I said I was a business coach, but they're like, "Oh, you're one of those personal development types. It never works." You know, I felt like saying, "Yeah, it's usually the ones that say it doesn't work that really need like a heaping Kool-Aid size, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 cups of personal development." But I mean, to this day, my mom doesn't believe it, and trust me. I love my mom. She did great with the tools that she had, but she would really go far if she picked up a book, or she quit beating herself up, or she just learned how to forgive and just learned how to love herself.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is now the data is actually there. They've done research with self-compassion in particular, lots of other things too, mindfulness, all kinds of stuff, but they did some self-compassion research with veterans who lived through war, who were diagnosed with PTSD. So, you know, not just, you know, someone who was in the army and came back, not that I'm not saying that's not worthy, but people that fought in very difficult places, that came back. And of course, you know, in America, we don't really take care of our soldiers when they come back. That's a whole nother discussion. But they came back with great difficulty. So they did, they studied it, and they used these tools of self-compassion with, and I don't know how big the study was, but it, the study's out there. You can research it. And they showed a significant improvement with dealing with trauma, with dealing with the visions that they would have, or the, you know, the instances that would trigger the outbursts and the scary emotions, you know, when nothing was going on and they'd still feel like they're in a war. They've done the research. So for everyone that says follow the science, science is there. Now, what I don't understand is why they don't teach it in science in school. You know, you really want to change the system. All you need to do is start teaching emotional intelligence in school, brain science in school. Hey, here's what your brain is doing when you're happy. You got some dopamine, you got some serotonin, you got some oxytocin. Here's what's happening when you're under all this stress. Hey, there's some cortisol running through your system. You know, my son, he's 8 years old. He can tell you the sun is made up of hydrogen and helium. He can tell you that water is H2O and hydrogen peroxide is H2O2. Like, he knows all kinds of stuff. Never mind, he can tell you every Pokemon and what their particular attacks are. It's like, how do you remember all this? And the pronunciations for some of these Pokemon aren't easy. Like, at first I thought dopamine and cortisol, like, these are difficult words and difficult concepts. But no way, not with the stuff he knows. So now I have to ask myself, why are we not teaching our bodies in science class? That's all we need to do. Follow the science and then start teaching it.
That's another podcast episode, but the school system hasn't changed since we've been going there, just better technology.
I'm the son of two teachers. I have great admiration for anyone who chooses to go into the teaching profession. I think they should be making more money than any of us, right? The military and teachers, two groups of people that are paid the least, should be paid the most. So great respect. And yes, it hasn't changed much. And we're not teaching, in my opinion, the real science and the real science of success. What is going to bring us joy? It's not passing the test so that you can get a job. We did it. Doesn't bring us joy. It didn't even bring us joy when we could keep a job our whole life, but now you can't even keep a job your whole life. Like, I grew up, if your resume was more than one page, they didn't even look at it. You're bouncing around too much. Now, if your resume is one page, what's wrong with you? We don't live in the days that IBM doesn't fire anyone anymore. You expect to either leave your job or get laid off from your job. That stuff that doesn't make you happy. So we just need to teach the science of success, which is emotional intelligence. And okay, if self-compassion is too woo for you, you don't need to teach it as self-compassion. Teach it as mindfulness. Teach it as forgiveness. The studies are there, and we know what chemicals they release. When you practice gratitude, dopamine is released. Okay. When you scroll Facebook, dopamine is released. Okay. Well, which is a better way of getting your hit of dopamine? You choose, but at least let's teach these kids, and let's know for ourselves what the choices are.
Amen. Now, I'm excited, not because I'm a speaker, but I'm just excited about the levels of speakers, the levels of people that you have. How do they sign up for this webinar? And what should they expect within the next 3 days? Of being
you should expect your life to be changed. I don't know what happened on here. Sorry about that. Something started screaming on my phone. You should expect your life to be changed. All you need to do is change one thing, right? There are a whole bunch of speakers all sharing their tools. If you change one thing, so many things change. We have these amazing teachers, John Gray, Brooke Burke. You're there, Omar, sharing great wisdom. It's selflovesummit.com. So go to selflovesummit.com and sign up. It's going to be next week. Well, I guess this is going to be played next week. So this weekend, June 22nd, 23rd. But honestly, I know podcasts last a long time. If you get this later, there's a good chance there are going to be some archives up there that you can join and see. But join us live. So June 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th. Here's how I say, you know, imagine waking up tomorrow, looking forward to what's coming to you in the day. Not thank God it's Friday or I hate Monday, but no matter what day it is, looking forward to it, enjoying the people you come into contact with, feeling healthier in your body. You know what the best weight loss technique is? And this isn't from me. This was someone I interviewed her a couple years ago, and I don't remember the exact weights, but I think she was like 300 something, lost a ton of weight, 100 something. You know what she said the best tool was? Not the diets, not the fat camp she got sent to, and those were her words. That's what they called it back then. Self-compassion. When she accepted herself as she was, the stress dissolved away, and she lost the weight. Again, we're doing it in reverse. So imagine waking up. You're enjoying the people you're with. You're enjoying your body and your health. You're enjoying your bank statement when you look at your bank account. You enjoy all of it, and you're looking forward to the day. Every day. This is the promise of self-love, of the self-love revolution, of self-compassion. So I hope you will join us. Listen to at least a handful of the interviews, maybe every one, but listen to a handful of them. Use the tools that are accessible to you. And I promise if you practice the tools, if you just listen to them, nothing happens. I promise you, if you practice the tools, your life changes completely. If not, call me and we'll talk about it.
Now, Jonathan, what would final words would you have for that person? Has doubts, on the sidelines, all bent and twisted, unhappy. They're checked out. They use any vice to numb the pain. What would you tell them? Just to make that shift, just to
first, I'd say I love
the process.
I just say I love you. Really, you're a loved human being, and I don't even need to know you to know that. And we don't have to even believe the same. We don't have to have the same religious beliefs or political beliefs. But I know if you're here on this planet, you're here to do something good here. And I love you. And it's time for you to make a change and start, if not loving yourself, being kind to yourself. Maybe that turns into it. You can start small steps. Baby steps are great. Baby steps are great. And just try, experiment. I treat all this as an experiment. So experiment. Show up to the summit, selflovesummit.com. Show up. Experiment. Pick one tool. Try it for 30 days. Every day, though. Not day one and day 30. Every day for 30 days. If you miss a couple of days, great. Start over. Begin again. But go 30 days. And I'm not saying you're going to go from here to here in 30 days. But if you don't feel any shift, I want to know about it. Call me up. My number is easy to find. My email is easy to get. Just search Jonathan Tron. It'll come up somewhere. Practice. Treat it like a scientific experiment. And you'll get to prove me right or prove me wrong. And I'm pretty sure that you'll discover that there's a whole new world out there that no one ever taught you about.
You know, Jonathan, that was beautiful. And not only that, but just the simple fact that you are in service and you're doing this for the low, low price of free.
Yeah.
you know, while everybody is chasing and looking at people's checkbook, checking accounts, maybe I'll help that. Well, no, I can't help you out. You can't afford me. That's not the way you operate. That's not the way you think. And I mean, why would someone not want to increase their levels of happiness. Just be happy. Like what we discussed, why not try something different? For those naysayers, those pessimists, oh, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Of course it's not going to work. That's your mindset. But open the world to the possibility. The possibilities are endless. Your imagination.
I want to be clear. It's not your fault. It's your mindset.
Exactly. It's your
mindset because I speak English because my parents spoke English. My mindset is English. If I grew up in a different country, my mindset would be Japanese or Russian or Hebrew or whatever it is, right? So it's not. My mindset is English. My politics are the same as my parents, right? I was brainwashed. I was brainwashed to speak English. And I was brainwashed to know that in the future, like you said, I'd be happy. So I still speak English. I haven't rebrainwashed my native language, but I have reprogrammed myself to live differently. And you can reprogram yourself too. Not your fault that things aren't feeling the way you want them to and that they told you they should be right now. Not your fault. And together with all these people, we can reprogram it. You want to be happy? Join us. You want more success? Join us. You want better health? Join us. You want more money in your bank account? You want to enjoy your bank account? Join us. That's the promise.
I'm honored and privileged on twofold. For you being here and dropping your knowledge, dropping your wisdom, and two, for the invite. When I saw that one, I don't care who else was on the lineup, but I'm like, me? I'm like, why, thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for wanting to change and be the change and just create happiness. We all have it within ourselves. And like what my mom said, and like what you just said, hey, we're only a product of our own environment. So thank you, Jonathan. Love you, brother. And let's create some positivity.
Thank you, Omar. Thank you for being a part of the Self-Love Revolution, a part of the Self-Love Summit. Truly, truly grateful for you. What if you did work? What if you took action and made it happen and started living inside of your purpose? What if you did work? Right now you can make the choice to never listen to that negative voice no more. The hardest prison to escape is our own mind. I was trapped inside that prison for a long time. To make it happen, you gotta take action. Just imagine what if it did work.